a squeaky brake, an errant car horn, that low rumble of dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of engines inching along a road built for speed. This is the sound of frustration. It's the sound of irritation. It's stress building up before you even get to your destination. It's a sound that many of us are familiar with. It surrounds a lot of us for almost an hour a day on average. Sounds that we try to drown out. We hop from one lane to another. Maybe that'll help. If you could just get to that next exit, the next corner. But knowing all along, more traffic awaits. Welcome to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. We're talking about transportation today. Up and down South Florida, from the Turnpike in Palm Beach County, 595 in Broward, the Dolphin Palmetto Interchange in Dade, the Overseas Highway down in the Keys. Roads here are choked with traffic. We don't drive during the worst of it as much as we idle and sit and wait. More than 8 out of 10 of us drive to work, spending extra hours per week sitting on on-ramps, stuck at a stoplight, baffled and beaten by traffic. This aggravation is echoed throughout South Florida, with transportation increasingly cited as a growing community challenge, impacting the quality of life for residents and visitors alike, and coming with an economic cost. The release of that air signals another Miami-Dade Metro Rail train pulling into the station awaiting a new load of passengers. On an average weekday during the first quarter of this year, riders took 77,000 trips on Metro Rail, according to the American Public Transit Association. That's up 1.5% compared to last year, almost three times the increase seen nationally by commuter heavy rail. Miamians are riding the rails. And while more people were riding those Miami Metro Rail lines, the bus systems in both Miami-Dade and Broward counties saw a drop in passenger trips during the same time period. Broward bus trips fell by 2%, Miami-Dade's down by almost 4%. This even though the job market has continued expanding throughout South Florida. Now, some credit or blame new free trolleys that have started running for taking paying passengers off buses and onto trolleys, or maybe it's Uber and Lyft continuing to grab riders even though they are operating illegally still in South Florida. Public transportation has been the butt of jokes here since at least 1985.
In Miami, the $1 billion subsidy helped build a system that serves less than 10,000 daily riders. That comes to $100,000 a passenger. It would have been a lot cheaper to buy everyone a limousine.
Hi, my name is James Santoli, and I live in Homestead.
James is a member of the WLRN Miami Herald Public Insight Network. We asked a simple question: how could public transportation become more convenient?
And I believe South Florida transportation would be more convenient if there were less breakdowns of buses, if they ran more on time, and if they could get the Metro Rail to be extended all the way down to Homestead and even Florida City.
A lot of these solutions can take a long time and be very expensive. Stretching Metro Rail was a popular idea among our Miami-Dade members, but so was better bus service.
Well, the buses.
Bus system.
Bus.
Cleaner buses, more aligned buses, more timely buses, different bus routes, better bus shelters, faster buses. That last voice you heard was attorney Mitch Bierman. He heads up the Greater Miami Chamber of Commerce Transportation Committee. He likes the idea of dedicated bus lanes.
Imagine how much more efficient and convenient transit would be if seriously busy corridors such as Coral Way, State Road 836, Kendall Drive, and Coral Reef Drive were served by bus rapid transit lines that fed into the Metro Rail.
You hear that word a lot when talking about transportation in South Florida. Imagine if. It can take a lot of imagination to see through the maze of moving around we've got now. We will hear some of that imagination from the three Miami mayors coming up later on in this program, the mayors of the county, the city, and the beach. We also will hear the top transportation policy guy in Broward imagining what his county could do for transportation with an extra penny of sales tax. But there is no single solution to our transportation trouble. It's part inheritance of previous projects, acceptance of our learned behavior, and proximity to transportation choices.
The biggest barrier for about half the population or more is access to
transit service at the home end.
Stephen Paulzine is Deputy Director for Urban Mobility Policy Research at the University of South Florida. Access means being close, and being close, according to the research, means a half mile near transportation. That's how long we want to walk before we get on a bus or train. But Paulzine admits that's even a stretch for most people. With the sun, the heat, the threat of a downpour in South Florida, and the lack of bus shelters at many stops, just getting to public transportation, even if it is an option, is a challenge here. So while we want our trip to transit to be short and fast, the longer the trip ahead, the research has found, the more likely we will consider riding instead of driving.
If you tend to have a longer distance trip where the time value starts to become significant, where you can, you know, relax and not be driving and perhaps, you know, work on your smartphone, read a memo, read a paper, etc. That can be attractive for commuters.
They're making decisions about how to get from point A to B based on the quality time they're going to have with their device.
That's Joe Schwederman. He's a professor at DePaul University in Chicago who studies transportation. Now, he's found our dedication to our smartphones may be a differentiating factor to get on a train instead of sitting in the driver's seat.
We're finding people are shifting to visual activities, you know, with LCD screens, rather than just placing cell phone calls, listening to music. And those are things you can't do when you're driving. And we found the share of people are performing tasks that are illegal when driving, which are visual type things with their device, has tripled in the last 6 years.
Now, a couple of caveats to Schwederman's research. It looked at commuter rail service between Chicago and its suburbs. Illinois has some of the most restrictive laws governing what you can do with a cell phone while driving. You cannot call, text, or email by hand at all, ever, if you're driving in Illinois. Florida's law is much less restrictive, and we see drivers distracted all the time by their phones here, don't we? But Schwederman's research suggests mobile-friendly transit like Wi-Fi, strong cellular signals, and charging stations can attract riders even if transit fares are rising. Whether for entertainment or business purposes, the ability to get our hands and eyes on a smartphone could get us out of the driver's seat, because that lost productivity means lost economic activity. As South Floridians, we waste 52 hours per year in traffic. That's enough time to watch an entire season's worth of Dolphins games. The wasted gas burned while idling and the value of our time has a price tag of almost $1,200 a year. This data comes from Texas A&M University.
In the Miami office, we have 373 employees, and they live everywhere from Homestead all the way up to South Broward.
That's Jarrett Davis. He's co-managing shareholder in the Miami office of law firm Greenberg Traurig.
So, you know, our ability to help them commute back and forth between the offices is absolutely critical, A, in terms of productivity, but B, also in terms of morale and healthy lifestyle, which can also impact productivity.
Now, his law firm offers employees a transportation choice. Get your parking for free at the office, which, by the way, is in a high-rise in downtown Miami where parking is a premium, or get your public transportation paid for, including parking at the train or the bus stop. 13% of his colleagues take the public transit option. Now, countywide, 200 companies and 8,200 employees use the system's corporate discount program. Bobby Oxenhorn's co-workers don't really have public transportation as an option. He's the finance director at JL Audio in Miramar. His sales and marketing people used to use one of the newest transit options available, Uber. That is, until the company stopped picking up riders in Broward County in late July. The company didn't like regulations the Broward County Commission was proposing.
We had a function that one of our employees was going to attend at a large hotel in downtown Fort Lauderdale. And the function was for several hundred young professionals. And after the function, the tradition would be that the young professionals would then move down to downtown Los Olas. Historically, they had always taken Uber after the main event, and this time they did not have Uber to take. She did not go. She chose not to go because she did not want to be on the road with that many people who have been drinking and potentially driving, and she also did not have a ride.
Now, this week, the Broward Commission is poised to approve what it hopes are more friendly rules to attract Uber and similar companies back to Broward. For Oxenhorn, he hopes the service returns, and with it, a pickup in his ability to do business.
It seems like business in general has slowed down. A lot of the organizations and large corporations in Broward County are not actually located within the city of Fort Lauderdale. So they are located around the suburbs, along the main highways and such. So transportation to and from these locations has definitely been hampered.
Uber, buses, trolleys, light rail, heavy rail, express lanes, toll lanes, dedicated lanes, bike lanes, streetcars, all those and others are in the mix of efforts to fix the maze of transportation here. As you'll hear from officials, there is no one answer.
The trolley road network, water taxis, east-west link, the streetcar, a link up to the north streetcar. We need a link up to the south,
bay link,
traffic lights.
The biggest issue we face right now is transportation.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We're talking about transportation today. And, you know, talk about transportation trouble is easy. Doing something, though, is much more complicated. These three guys know.
Carlos Jimenez, Mayor of Miami-Dade County.
Tomas Regalado, City of Miami Mayor.
Philip Levine, the Mayor of Miami Beach.
They serve different roles and have different responsibilities in getting their communities moving. We had all three of them together to hear what they think the challenges are and what to do about them.
Miami-Dade County is in charge of transit for all the county. And so we have to do a better job of all sorts of mobility. We need to do a better job with capacity of our roads. Because no matter what, if we have the greatest transit system in the world today, the majority of people are still going to be in cars. So we have to make sure that our roads are optimized, that our signalization is optimized, that we utilize new technology as much as possible to make it easier for people to move around this county.
Mayor Regalado, in the city of Miami, what's your assessment of the ability of residents to move around for personal reasons and for commerce?
Well, you know, the other day I was standing on Southwest A Street and Miami Avenue with the president of Swire, and he mentioned and we confirmed that within a half a mile radius of where we were standing, there is a $4 billion construction projects around it, including City Center. That is creating a temporary crisis situation for residents and visitors and workers. But we do need to accelerate within our means the mobility for the residents of the city of Miami, and we have done so. We have created 8 routes of the trolley, which is free, and last year alone we had 3.6 million boardings in the trolley. Not that this is going to solve the east-west, the north-south, but within the city of Miami, we have given those who work in Brickell or live in Brickell and want to go to Wynwood or the Design District or the Civic Center or the hospital area the possibility of leaving the car, park, and use that.
Mayor Levine, you meantime are stuck on a narrowest piece of land here off of the mainland. It's a small municipality, but you are serving millions and millions of tourists. It is among the biggest economic engines of the entire county and South Florida.
Well, it's a great challenge. And of course, we're the victim right now of our tremendous success in Miami Beach, because the whole world wants to move to Miami Beach, visit Miami Beach. And what's most important for us is protecting the quality of life. The biggest issue we face right now, of course, is transportation coupled with sea level rise. We have aggressively, challenged and had some great successes with sea level rise, because your streets can't have public transportation if they turn into rivers. Mm-hmm. So we have addressed that. We're moving forward. We have a great plan that's taken traction. But now what's step two is coming up with aspects of public transportation, which are very, very important. Like Mayor Regalado, we put together an amazing trolley program in South Beach, Mid Beach, North Beach. We're putting it all together so it coordinates. We're beginning with water taxis to utilize our waterways as best as possible. And we are going to move forward with our own streetcar, our own permanent trolley system, something you would see in Europe, that allows people to park and ride. What we want to see is less cars on Miami Beach.
Mayor Jimenez, has this community finally gotten to the point, including its elected leaders with the trio here, that it's the transportation debate is not about how to move cars, but how to move people?
I think it's both. Because, again, even if you have the greatest transportation system in the world, most of the people, look at New York, look at Chicago, they have a legacy transportation. New York has 300 miles of subway.
Mm-hmm.
They have a great bus system.
Mm-hmm.
You still have traffic jams. You still have a lot of people in cars. You have taxis. So we have to come to grips with the fact that, yeah, we need to enhance our transit system. We need to have more options. The road network needs to be as optimized as possible. We need to expand our public transportation system. I agree with Mayor Levine, and I'm sure Mayor Regalado agrees that we desperately need a Bay Link. We need an east-west link. We need a link up to the north. We need a link up to the south. All those public transportation systems. So it's not. I don't want to call it transit. I want to call it mobility.
Mm-hmm.
We need to make sure that our people have different options to get around. Dade County's job is actually to connect it so that you have a seamless system that you can travel from Miami to Miami Beach and back and forth. With all the millions of people that, A, live there and visit there, you need public transportation.
You began this conversation, Mayor Jimenez, saying that the county is responsible for transportation, mm-hmm. for transit in the county, in Miami-Dade County.
Yes.
With projects that are happening in municipalities like what Mayor Regalado is saying in the city of Miami, what Mayor Levine is saying in Miami Beach, does it make that job that much more difficult?
No, actually, because if you have good partners that understand that it's not just about one city, it's really... We're a region. I mean, somebody comes here and lands on MIA, they're coming to Miami, right? They may be going to South Beach, but they're coming to Miami. Mm-hmm. And so somebody goes to Coral Gables, they're coming to Miami.
Yeah.
All right. And so the operative word is the region, Miami. And Miami is the name of the region. We have to act we are a region. And our residents, the only ones that know about the boundaries are probably the three people sitting in this room.
Politicians, but also exactly. The regulators. Certainly the regulators, yeah. Mayor Regalado, that you have to rely on for other funding sources in Tallahassee and in Washington. Those political lines in a map are important for those agencies that traditionally have been responsible for the bulk of mass transit and public transportation funding.
You're right. I remember as a journalist, I used to follow William Lehman, then Congress member,
mm-hmm.
and Lehman brought millions and millions and millions of dollars for public transportation and roads and how about Dante Fassel?
Mm-hmm.
But things have changed in Washington, and we don't get that support, nor we get support from the state. I mean, it seems to me that the elected leaders of the state and the federal government are saying, well, let the county deal itself, let the cities, you know, after all, they have money.
Is that a shortcoming of the Dade delegation in Tallahassee and in Washington?
I think it is. Yes, I think it is. I think, you know, everybody recognizes that Washington is dysfunctional in terms of not moving things along. But I'll tell you something. We met with Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart, mm-hmm. and he was enthusiastic about Bay Link and the streetcar project of the city of Miami. We were told, the mayor's sitting here, by the consultants many years ago, I think it was a year ago, well, we don't want to seek federal money because it takes a lot of time. I think we should, and I think we have to, because, you know, you cannot put the brunt of the cost of the Bay Link or a streetcar on the residents and taxpayers of the city.
Mayor Levine, how about this? Do you share Mayor Regalado's criticism of local delegation to Tallahassee and Washington?
Well, I can only tell you, based on our experience, we have a wonderful relationship working with the county. And just to hit on one item, for example, the light signalization. The residents of Miami Beach complaining about the lights. They don't synchronize. And we have to go back to them and say, well, we would love to take care of it, but we don't control the lights. The county did. They do. So what we did with the county is we actually took an employee that we hired, trained, put them within the county with the county's permission to handle our lights independently. And that's an example of working together.
One of the concerns with public transportation, though, is it has been built and the supply has outstripped demand. There's very little public transportation in this country, as you both, all three of you know, that's not publicly subsidized somehow.
No, it's all publicly subsidized.
There
is no public transportation system that I know of that is not subsidized. Our fare box recovery,
mm-hmm.
is 30%. That means 70% of the system is actually subsidized either by the state, federal, or you and me, when we pay our property taxes, mm-hmm. we're actually subsidizing the transit system of Miami-Dade County, too.
How do you begin to prioritize, Mayor Jimenez?
Well, what are the first things that we can do? Where still 98% of the people are in cars. So my first thing was, look, let's take 10 of the most widely used travel commuting corridors. Let's make sure that the traffic lights are optimized to the best level possible. We need to make an investment there because although we have a really good, bright central brain, which we bought with PTP, mm-hmm. unfortunately, the control boxes at the intersections are 20th century technology. They're not smart enough to handle the brains of the central controller. And so we're going to change that. We're going to put cameras. We're going to make it an intelligent system so that those corridors you can optimize. Then and on a parallel path, then we need to optimize and say, okay, we know we need to expand our transit system. We know there may be different options in different places. The city of the Miami Beach and Miami and Baylink may be light rail. There may be BRT going somewhere else. It may be
bus
light
rapid
rail
transit,
exactly
right.
Bus rapid transit. There may be light rail going to other parts of the county, maybe south, maybe west. This is the hot issue. We have consensus among the county commission. We have consensus among the MPO.
The Metropolitan Planning Authority.
Exactly, which for a long time people were looking at it from a very protective, not a regional perspective, a very parochial perspective. Mm-hmm. Now everybody understands, look, we need to look at this as a region. We got to work together. Let's do the projects. Let's get it done.
What kind of timeline for the signal optimization as a priority that you mentioned?
I expect we've already done some optimization on US-1. You should already see some improvement there and some other quarters.
I'll look for it tonight.
All right, with the technology that we have already, okay? And so we expect to fast-track a purchase of new equipment for those intersections and then have it in place, by this time next year.
Mayor Regalado, how about that prioritization from the city of Miami's perspective to move people around?
One of the things that we are doing in this budget is we are hiring, we're setting money to hire about 26 civilians that will be in downtown area, in Brickell area, manning, with the county's permission, the traffic lights. And
so people and actually pushing the green light, the red light.
People actually knowing how many cars on this side, how many cars on that side. That would free many police officers, which is a win-win situation. The other thing is,
that's a 19th century solution, right?
Yes,
having
exactly.
Boots on
exactly.
the ground.
Actually, I'd like to talk to him about it because I want to bring... That could be a short term, but the expense of those people could actually help us then purchase some of those smart boxes that we need that can actually see what's going on, right? And then make the change without having to have them on the ground. But it's certainly a great short term solution for the problems that they have in Brickell.
Either a smart bugs or a smart person manning the traffic, it's fine by me. The other thing that we're doing, we're adding routes for the trolley. We have done the numbers, and we think that we can keep the trolleys free until 2018.
Mayor Levine, your priority list for the beach.
Okay, first, let me just say one thing, because it's important you brought it up, about transportation. Transportation costs money. In other words, this is not a profitable venture. If it was, every entrepreneurial company in the world would be down here laying down tracks and creating profit, great transportation. It is a public service. It costs money. And we have to step up to the plate and realize it's an economic generator. It's good for society. You're just going to have to pay for it. Okay, for Miami Beach, we have two issues. Number one, we have what we call intra-transportation issues and intra-transportation. Inter is the bay link coming across the causeway. This is very important.
Getting on and off the beach.
We must do it. We have workers coming from all over the county to coming in to work at our hotels, and they deserve better. They deserve better public transportation, reasonable and clean and efficient. That is going to take a few more years. We're working with the county, the federal government, the state to do all the environmentals to get that done. So as fast as we'd like to get that done tomorrow, there are certain environmentals that have to take place. The second issue is intra-city, which is what we're moving forward on fast and furious. That is a streetcar in Miami Beach, like they had 50, 60, 70 years ago, that moves our people around Miami Beach that allows them not to take their cars. They can park and they can ride. So that'll be literally an addition to our trolleys that are on the road. We need an actual streetcar. But the one thing, Tom, I want to say it's important is that for Miami Beach, which you said is a major economic generator, and quality of life for our residents are most important, we do not want to entangle and make our causeways worse than they are. So, for example, there's a project on Watson Island right now. Mm-hmm. We just authorized a major transportation study that we hope will show that if that's overdeveloped, that's going to hurt our causeway. Until we have a great solution, let's not make the problem worse. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure that we limit development until we have proper transportation in place.
You're saying limit the development on Watson Island? Limit
Absolutely.
The development on the beach itself?
Everywhere. We need a limit on the beach. We need a limit on Watson Island. We need to make sure that we don't put the cart before the horse.
What are you willing to propose in terms of limitations of residential and commercial real estate development on the beach?
We're already doing it right now. In other words, getting something approved in Miami Beach is no easy thing.
Lots of residents will tell you it never has been, though, Mr. Mayor.
It's becoming more and more challenging because what we want to make sure is we don't overpopulate our island. We don't want to make congestion worse than it is.
So you're not proposing any new regulatory hurdles?
Nothing right now, but what we are proposing is massive transportation initiative in our streetcar system that we need to put in place.
The mayors of Miami-Dade County, the city of Miami, and Miami Beach. Still to come, how the same trio want to tackle a 27-year-old dream.
The transit station was located exactly where the Pan Museum is today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's gone.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. It's Stop and Go, transportation in the Sunshine Economy. You can follow us on Twitter at WLRN and go online, WLRN.org. We have a map there where you can measure your average commuting time to your neighborhood's average commuting time. Again, that's at WLRN.org. Back in 1988, it was called the Miami Beach Light Rail Transit System. And again in 1995. By 2002, it had the name Miami Beach Transportation Corridor and then went by the name Baylink. A second study followed in 2004. So 27 years after it was first studied, a rail link between the mainland and Miami Beach still remains the holy grail of sorts for transportation. Miami Beach leaders received an unsolicited offer by a French company to build a streetcar system on the beach. It could act as an anchor for a future Baylink. We continue our transportation talk now with Miami-Dade Mayor Carlos Jimenez, Miami Mayor Tomas Regalado, and Philip Levine, Mayor of Miami Beach.
What we don't want to do is just accept an unsolicited bid. What we would like to do, and it's going to be brought to the commission next month, is open it up to other bidders who can look at that proposal and say, hey, we can do it better, we can do it more efficiently, we can do it faster, we can do it less costly. We want everyone to look at our situation and come back with the best bids.
You've set an October 22nd deadline for those bids.
We're going to push it much longer. In other words, no. That's going to have to be a longer period of time. You've got to give people the opportunity and the time to look at our situation and come up with their own proposals. We don't want to limit it to one bidder. But I could tell you something, we're going to get it done. By next year, we're going to be moving forward on some bidder, on some transportation, on a streetcar system in Miami Beach. That's the most important thing for us right now.
And the funding for that you anticipate to come from the city of Miami Beach?
Well, we look at a combination. We're hoping to get from the city of Miami Beach. We're looking to the state for some assistance. We're going to be looking to the federal government. We're going to be looking for even a private sector in a P3,
public-private partnership.
Absolutely.
Right.
No question about it.
This project would remove roadway from vehicular use, would it not?
Well, the most important thing with a streetcar is it must have its own dedicated lane. It may be a lane. It may be a parking lane. It may be in the center of the road. So we're not necessarily removing anything.
Let's go to the other side of Baylink, and that Mayor Regalado is in your municipality in the city of Miami. What are you prepared to do in regards to Baylink at this point here? What are we, about a quarter of a century into this conversation?
I remember when Mayor Alex Penelas in 2004, I think it was, came up with the idea of Baylink, because this conversation, as you mentioned, Tom, has been ongoing for 25 years. He showed us a plan. The transit station was located exactly where the Pan Museum is today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's gone. So where's the depot? There was a conversation about Park West and near Omni. Well, that's gone. World Center, it's coming. So the question is, how do we figure out this? I think it's a great idea. I have been there in all the meetings that we have had. The city, it's fully supportive of this because we understand that the more connectivity between the beach and downtown Miami, it's the best thing that could happen to downtown Miami. We're just waiting to get more data and especially understand that we need support from other government entities like the state and the federal government.
Mayor Jimenez, lots of concern by your colleague, Mayor Regalado, in regards to the mainland link of Baylink.
Well, there is, but I expect that at the end of the day, I would hope that this is what would transpire. We're about to have our Grand Central Station. It's going to be built by All Aboard.
This is the All Aboard in downtown near Government Center.
All Aboard will have,
World City Center.
Exactly. So you'll have passenger rail that'll take you to Orlando. You'll have the tri-rail there that eventually one day will open up the commuter rail from directly from downtown Fort Lauderdale, West Palm Beach, Aventura, et cetera, right into downtown. You'll have Metro Rail. You have Metro Mover. Mm-hmm. And hopefully one day that'll also be one of the stops for the Baylink. I would expect, and I think I know what Mayor Levine's doing. He's going to do some kind of a loop inside his city that will provide intra-city connectivity with some kind of technology, and I would hope that the same thing would happen in the city of Miami, where they would provide some intra-city connectivity between downtown and hopefully up to the design district and to Midtown. And if that happens, then the county's job is to connect the two by running something down MacArthur and then running something else up the Julia Tuttle. Hmm. And there, really, now you're talking about something, okay, where you really have a big loop where you can get to a lot of different places where you have the infrastructure, public transportation infrastructure for the two cities that are the densest cities in our area. And so what we have to build is good public infrastructure in those areas that are dense, the densest, all right, and then somehow connect those employment centers and density centers so that people can get to them and get back home. So now you have interconnectivity and intraconnectivity.
You've sketched out a broad and ambitious plan there. And when you think of that loop across from the mainland, downtown Miami, across the MacArthur Causeway into South Beach and up the beach, across the Tuttle, down through Wynwood and Midtown, very ambitious, Mr. Mayor. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that none of you will be in your offices that you're currently in if and when that ever even begins
completion. I hope to be there when we break the ground. I don't think we're going to be there when we cut the ribbon.
I hope to be alive, just alive.
You hope to be there too, on the but
you know what's also interesting?
Go ahead, sir.
What's really interesting, and I think Mayor Regalado or Mayor Levine said it, that about 80 years ago, you could take a streetcar from Miami Beach and right. go all the way to Coral Gables.
Yeah. Baylink is a long unfulfilled promise. It was part of the pledge in 2002 when Miami-Dade County voters approved using a half penny sales tax to fund transportation. Still to come, what an extra full penny sales tax could mean for transportation in Broward County, as South Florida has evolved into one big region, but the transportation agencies haven't.
The FDOT district down there in Miami-Dade, and then you have a different district in Broward and Palm Beach, and then you have two different planning councils, and basically in the region, three different metropolitan planning organizations, and a partridge in a pear tree.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy talking transportation today. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Greg Stewart says he remembers South Florida when there were trees between the cities. He should know. He's been traveling the roads of our region his entire life. Now he's responsible for policies guiding how we get around. He's executive director of the Broward Metropolitan Planning Organization. MPO is one of those acronyms you learn if you're talking transportation. BRT, Bus Rapid Transit, FDOT, Florida Department of Transportation, MDX, Miami Expressway, MPO, Metropolitan Planning Organization. It's the group that helps decide what's a transportation priority. So, back to Greg Stewart and that comment that he remembers when there were trees between the cities.
Well, back when I was a kid, actually cities used to have defined boundaries, and I really did mean that because it was actually very factual. Between Hallandale Beach and you would go into North Miami, there actually used to be trees everywhere. There weren't stores and shopping centers, and even between Fort Lauderdale and Pompano, between Pompano and Deerfield, everything was very much, they had individual distinct characters for all of our communities because they didn't connect together like they do now. Back when I was younger, you know, there was a distinct area. And so as we've grown in Southeast Florida, even in Miami, everything has grown together and become one big homogenized place. That separation of what made, let's say, Coral Gables different than downtown Miami. Well, Coral Gables has a great, you know, story because of the trees and the architecture, but there actually used to be separate spaces there as well.
The community has gotten homogenized. It's gotten larger, but the transportation regulators and agencies haven't become homogenized, have they?
Not at all. And that's, you know, you have to look at how the infrastructure was set up, you know, back in the day. And you have the DOT district, FDOT district down there in Miami-Dade, which is 6. And then you have a different district in Broward and Palm Beach, which is 4. And then you have 2 different planning councils and basically in the region, 3 different metropolitan planning organizations and a partridge in a pear tree. That's all that existed because of the way it used to be. And unfortunately, our government, and just no different than anywhere else in the world, didn't really change over the time as the area was growing together.
So as an executive director of one of those organizations with an acronym, the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, yours in Broward County, how would you design that transportation regulation system today on a local level, if you could?
And that's really kind of what we're kind of structuring towards. I've been working with my partners in both Miami-Dade and Palm Beach to figure out a way to have a little bit of the autonomy that, you know, the locals are demanding because they have that institutional memory of this place that was all disjointed or not even together. And now, you know, we have a society, one traveling public, I always like to call it that. A lot of my MPO partners are like, oh, no, we don't want to merge together. We don't want to do that. You don't have to, but we have to take care of the public. And whether you, my relatives are in Cutler Bay, I have relatives in Juneau Beach. I live in Fort Lauderdale. I drive between all of them. There should be no division on any of that. And how you get from one place to the other as a member of the public, my relatives, they don't know that there's 3 different, you know, MPOs and 2 different DOT districts. So working together as we've been trying to, you know, trying to merge our plans together, merge our efforts together, folks have to at least let their guard down. It's not, oh my, you know, the end of the world is going to happen if I lose a little bit of control over this. It's learning how to share the control.
Well, control comes from money, and there's a significant difference in how transportation is funded in Miami-Dade County and how it's funded in Broward County. Yet you want to take a page from the Miami-Dade County book and have a special sales tax dedicated to transportation. You've been proposing a 1 cent sales tax for transportation, which would be twice the amount in Miami-Dade County in terms of as a flat number on retail sales.
Well, the 37 elected officials that make up my governing board at the MPO, and then I cover county commissioners as well as the 31 city commissioners, basically are looking for a funding source. 75% of the money we get from the federal government through our gas taxes are going to maintenance and operation of the existing systems we have in Broward. So about 25% of the federal dollars are left and state to be spent on new or improving projects. So looking at a long-term sustainable funding source is something we're going to have to do. Right now, Congress up in Washington, D.C. is debating on the House side as well as the Senate is a new transportation authorization. Well, from what we're hearing in Washington, it's going to be flat funded. And that means there will be new revenues coming in. And when you have that type of situation, how do you move, you know, Broward share of the population is 1.8 of that 400,000 trips they're about to go into Miami-Dade every day. You know what the roads are like. It's not going to get a lot better. Tri-Rail is trying to operate, but, you know, there's other areas where we need to have transit to operate between the areas. That has to be identified with funding.
What lessons have you been able to take from the Miami-Dade experiment back that stretches a decade or so ago of going to voters, getting voters to approve a half-cent sales tax to go toward transportation? And here we are so many years later, and universally that project has been seen as a real failure in terms of fulfilling the promises that were made to voters and transit back better than a decade ago.
We've looked all around the country, not just at Miami-Dade. Our elected officials are very cognizant of what's going on south of the Snake Creek there into the Miami-Dade side. The lessons that we gleaned as far as staff and what we're telling our elected officials is a half penny wasn't enough to really cover the issues Miami-Dade had. If we do a half penny in Broward, it wouldn't be enough to really cover the issues not only our transit operators have, but also our roadway facilities, our traffic lights, all the things that are necessary, our street flooding, the things that are necessary to take care of the public's needs going from now for another 30 years and or 25, the length of the sales tax. So we're telling them this is what's necessary. You go to the public, you ask them for a half penny, you're not going to get the capital, and the expectation will more than likely exceed your ability.
So as you start laying the ground to ask voters for a penny increase in sales tax in Broward County, what are the pledges? What are the promises that that penny could bring in terms of transit relief?
On our east side, our communities on the east side, we could actually fund the operation and capital costs for a new commuter service on the FEC tracks running through our traditional downtowns. We could actually raise the bridge on the new river where we have issues with the marine industries and conflict with the having transit on those eastern tracks.
By raise the bridge, do you mean building a new bridge?
That is correct.
Building a brand new bridge for rail traffic, commuter rail traffic.
Correct, which is actually very important for the marine industry. Downriver on the new river, we have quite a bit of the marine industries located there, and we'd like to keep them there and have them expand as if we can.
The low bridges and across the new river are consistently seen as a big deterrent for north-south rail traffic.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's one of the biggest challenges that we're facing with, you know, returning passenger rail service on the FEC side of the tracks. We've been negotiating really right now with the All Aboard Florida people and the marine industries of South Florida to actually address some of the concerns of the existing low bridge and how many trains come across a day. So that is a huge factor beyond the capital and operating side. That takes care of some of the eastern communities running more premium bus services east-west along all of our east-west corridors in Broward. That's something that will help deal with a lot of the congestion issues because people will be able to see a rapid bus system, you know, going from one point to another with not multiple stops in between to get to their jobs or to educational facilities or healthcare facilities much faster. There's a whole signalization program that we would really like to see roll out for our existing roadway network that would help make it more efficient. Then you have to look at the Western communities and say, you know, right now they're car-centric, auto-centric. What are the things that are necessary? Most of the infrastructure out there is relatively new, but there are issues with flooding, and there's issues that they're going to be facing as well. So we can get ahead of some of those things.
I'm not hearing road expansion, increased road expansion. Is that off the table for the penny increase? Should voters get the chance to vote on it and it gets approved?
Just on a State Road 7, let's take as an example, and if anyone's familiar in your listening area with State Road 7, 441 in Hollywood, right now it's going from four lanes to six. That project's been ongoing for a good decade and a half, maybe a little longer. That every mile of widening State Road 7 in that area basically costs $150 million. Of that, only $30 million is tied up in construction. The balance of that is right-of-way acquisition. When you start thinking about that and applying that amount of money to a road like Oakland Park Boulevard or Commercial Boulevard or Sunrise Boulevard or Hollywood Pines, we can't afford even with a penny to widen the roads.
Greg Stewart heads up the Broward Metropolitan Planning Organization. He hopes Broward voters will see the referendum to add a penny to the sales tax on the 2016 ballot. Still to come, never has a road had a more apt name than in the Keys.
Life in the Keys has a defining and unifying factor, US 1.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. common for drivers to feel hemmed in here. Between all the one-way roads, the dead-end streets, the canals, the railroad crossings, it's tough to find an alternate route, but at least we have some. In the Keys, it's just one ribbon of highway. Sometimes it's best just to wait and spin your wheels. Here's Nancy Klingener from our Southernmost Bureau.
In 24 years living and working in the Keys, I've had a bunch of different jobs. My longest commute was less than 5 miles. I felt pretty sorry for myself because I had to get in the car every day. In most of my jobs, including the one I have now, my primary form of transportation is my bike. That's not without some drawbacks. In summer, you have to be prepared for downpours, and you can get kind of sweaty even just riding a mile across the island. Parking is free and convenient. I feel aggrieved if I have to lock my bike more than half a block from my destination. And when you're traveling through Old Town Key West, which was designed for humans, not cars, a lot of times it's actually faster on a bike. But we're lucky, and we know it. For most people who live in the Keys, there's no escaping the car. Life in the Keys has a defining and unifying factor, US 1. The overseas highway, along with the water pipeline that runs underneath, makes life as we know it in the Keys possible. Most of what we eat, drink, and otherwise consume is trucked down here from the mainland. Our economy relies on tourists, many of whom drive here. So do the workers for a lot of our hotels, restaurants, and stores, especially once you get above the 7 Mile Bridge. If you live along the island chain, US 1 can really dominate your life, to the point where you calculate what time to run out for groceries, when to leave for work, how many after-school activities your kids can do. That probably sounds familiar if you live in Kendall or Weston, except we don't have an alternate route. Our only road is the aptly named US 1. So how and why do we cope with that? I learned to deal with traffic slowdowns on the overseas highway a long time ago by trying to envision it as a train. If you look at modern US 1 that way, you can just accept that you're on a single track and you don't control the speed. Enjoy the view. There's nothing like topping the 7 Mile Bridge arch over Mosher Channel and seeing the mangrove islands and blue and green water spread out before you. Driving home after a long day that includes 200 miles of highway, I still think, wow, I get to live here. Like all of South Florida, tourism is booming in the Keys. That boom means more cars, and more cars mean more brake lights more often. Technology is helping. The Monroe County Sheriff's Office pushes out notifications when the highway is closed and when it reopens. We gripe about the delays, but the truth is, most of us live here by choice. Sharing that highway, that lifeline, is typical of our community. We live in close quarters, but we value independent thinking. In the Keys, we have to share one road, but we're still comfortable with everyone going their own way. I'm Nancy Klingener in Key West.
It was Jack Kerouac who wrote, "Nothing behind me, everything ahead of me, as is ever so on the road." Of course, he never pedaled his bicycle down Duval Street, at least not that we know of. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.